This is the last day of this October 2010 7-day session. We'll take up another koan today. This is from the Blue Cliff Record, number 40. Nanshuan's It Is Like a Dream. Rico, he's a high government official in China. Rico, while talking with Nanshuan, said, "Master of the teachings, Zhou, said, heaven and earth and I are of the same root. All things and I are of one substance." Isn't that marvelous? Nanshuan pointed to a flower in the garden, called to the official and said, "People these days see this flower as though they were in a dream." First, we haven't read the about the life of Nanshuan in quite a while. His Japanese name is Nansen. Almost all of the names in the koan collections are Chinese, but the Japanese, in order to have these Chinese names, in order to have the Chinese people in these koans be more intimate with them, they gave them Japanese versions of those names, and our own lineage is in the Japanese tradition, and so we're caught between using these Japanese names like Nansen or the original Nanshuan, and as most of you know, it's a real dilemma because the Chinese names, it would be simple if the Chinese names were as simple as the Japanese names, but they're sometimes very difficult to pronounce. So I continue to go back and forth. But this one isn't so bad, Nanshuan. This is Joshu's teacher, that is, Zhao Zhou's teacher. So Nanshuan, his dates are 748 to 835. He himself was a disciple of the great Ma Zu, in Japanese, Basso. His family name was Wang. I'm reading again from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. Even before he became an old Zen teacher, his students referred to him as Old Teacher Wang. It would be quite an honorific in China, and as well as in Japan and other East Asian countries that are so steeped in the Confucian ethos. Old was synonymous with venerable. The older you got, the more respect you were shown. It's sort of the inverse of the United States. Before meeting Ma Zu, he was already widely versed in the various schools and sutras of Mahayana Buddhism. This also is quite common among the great masters, is they did so much preparatory study and sometimes other practices before they got to Zen. once Roshi Kaplow, when he was in Taiwan, he met a very well-known Taiwanese teacher there. His name is Master Nan. And Master Nan asked him, "What kind of Buddhism do you teach?" And Roshi said, "Zen." And Master Nan said, "Oh, Zen is the highest of all." Now, rather than just thinking it's, that means it's the best, that's not a good way to understand it. By highest, I think really what he meant was that you have to have discarded a lot, and freed yourself from a lot of the complications of religion to have Zen appeal to you, because it is such a, well, as it used to be said in the Zen countries, in Zen we have nothing. In Zen we have nothing. It is so stripped down, it is so crystalline in its transparency, its insistence in seeing through the world of appearances, being unattached to ritual and the words, texts. So it makes sense that so many of these great luminaries in Zen would have found their way only after exhausting, in a sense, exhausting the teachings of study and other Buddhist schools. When Nan Xuan first met his teacher, Ma Zhu, he is said to have instantly forgotten the net of delusions and delighted in samadhi. That's what has come down to us in the records. You know, the Chinese are great record keepers. They, again, as a Confucian society, they're very invested in keeping the ancestors all straight and the records, the history clear. And we have here an incident that reveals Nan Xuan's independent spirit. One day, Master Ma Zhu was serving rice gruel to the monks from a bucket. This is the tradition in the monasteries in China and Japan, is you eat in a zendo, and on these platforms, these tan, and usually it's the cook or the assistants to the cook come through the zendo with a bucket and serve the monks. So he was serving rice gruel to the monks. And as he gave out the portions, he asked each monk, "What's in the bucket?" Kind of a testing question. What is it really? When he got to Nan Xuan and he asked the same question, Nan Xuan said, "The old monk should say this with his mouth closed." Well, we don't know the circumstances of his enlightenment under Ma Zhu, but after he was given Dharma transmission, he built a solitary hut on Mount Nanshuan, here's another case of a master just taking the name of the mountain, and on this mountain, and remained there for more than 30 years practicing Zen. A high-ranking official named Lu Gong invited Nanshuan to descend from the mountain and honored him by becoming his student. Actually, I think this Lu Gong might be another name for this today's high government official, Rikko. Due to this event, Nanshuan's reputation spread widely, and students numbering in the hundreds came to study under him. One day, when Nanshuan entered the hall to address the monks, he said, "Dipamkara Buddha said, the arising in mind of a single thought gives birth to the myriad things." Dipamkara Buddha is one of the non-historical Buddhas. The arising in mind of a single thought gives birth to the myriad things. Single thought, and the world is created. The world of differentiation, of thingness, the world of phenomena arises instantly with a single thought. He goes on, "Why is it that phenomenal existence is empty? If there is nothing within mind, then how does one explain how the myriad things arise?" So, how do phenomena arise out of nothing? Isn't it as if shadowy forms differentiate emptiness? This question is like someone grasping sound and placing it in a box, or blowing into a net to fill it with air. Therefore, some old worthy said, "It's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not a thing." That was his teacher, Mazu. "Thus we just teach you, brethren, to go on a journey." Once Nanshuan quoted his teacher, who said, "Mind is Buddha." And then he went on to say, "But old teacher Wang," referring to himself, "old teacher Wang doesn't talk that way. It's not mind. It's not Buddha. It's not a thing. Is there any error in speaking this way?" And at that, his famous disciple Zhao Zhou bowed and left. These masters were just shameless in how arbitrarily they used words. But it wasn't just for frivolous reasons. They used words as they wished to, in hopes of freeing their students, the monks, from their attachment to words, or their tendency to get attached to words and meanings and definitions. So one day they might say, when someone asks, "What is Buddha? What is ultimate truth?" They might say, "This very mind is Buddha." And then to someone else, might say, to the same question, "Not mind, not Buddha." One day, Nanxuan took the seat to give Taisho, and this same Lu Gong said, "We invite the master to expound the Dharma for the sake of all beings." Nanxuan said, "What would you have me say?" Lu Gong said, "Can the master offer no expedient method to enter the way?" Nanxuan said, "What do you say is lacking?" Lu Gong said, "Why are there six realms and four modes of birth?" Nanxuan said, "I don't teach that." Well, at least he didn't on that day. His teaching on that day was, "I don't teach that." This is a famous one, and I looked in a book here, and I just confirmed that this Lu Gong is the government official in our koan today. And here's another story. When Lu Gong took his leave from Nanxuan to return to his duties as magistrate of Shuangcheng City, Nanxuan asked him, "When your eminence returns to Shuangcheng, how will you govern the people there?" Lu Gong answered, "I will use wisdom to govern them." Nanxuan said, In that case, the people there will meet with great distress." Nanxuan would have been well equipped to sort out the campaign speeches of modern day politicians. This points to the uncompromising. Spareness of Zen, which rests on the fundamental faith that we don't need to contrive to function out of our wisdom or compassion. That is our nature. Wisdom and compassion are our nature. What we need to do is get rid of notions of doing anything, really. And then our wisdom will flow naturally. When Nanxuan was near death, the head monk said, "Master, where will you be 100 years from now?" Nanxuan said, "I'm going to be an ox living down at the bottom of the mountain." Let me just explain this. The ox is a beast of burden, and Nanxuan here is expressing his hope that he will be able to be a vessel of service to all beings at the bottom of the mountain. We say in Zen that the road to enlightenment is going up the mountain, and after enlightenment we come down the mountain to give to the many beings, to work, to serve, to help. I'm going to be an ox living down at the bottom of the mountain. The monk said, may I follow you to that place as an ox? Nanchuan said, if you follow me, you must do so with a single blade of grass in your mouth. The master then became ill. He said to the monks, the star's light is dim but eternal. Don't say that I'm coming or going. And then he died. This Lu Gong, whose maybe his more familiar name is Rikko, as it shows in the koan here. He attained an advanced understanding under Nanchuan. So one day he was talking with him, and he quotes this master of the teachings, Zhou, whose more formal name is Sung Zhao. So let's see what we can say about Sung Zhao here. He lived in the 300s and 400s. He was one of the four primary disciples of Kumarajiva. Kumarajiva, I learned in my pre-Taisho frenzy in the mill house, is not Indian. Kumarajiva, it's an Indian name, but he was Chinese, as is this Sung Zhao. Kumarajiva was a great translator. And this Sung Zhao, he began with the teachings of Lao Tzu and Xuang Tzu. And then after reading the Vimalakirti Sutra, he became a monk, a Mahayana monk, and studied the writings of Nagarjuna under Kumarajiva. Now, given his statement there, that's in the koan, I'm just going to read a little bit about this. His concept of shunyata, or emptiness, is that things both exist and do not exist. Everything arises in a conditioned manner. Things are like a magically created man, which on the one hand is not real, but since it exists as magically created, it is on the other hand not unreal. We run across this teaching in another great Mahayana sutra, the Lankavatara Sutra, which says, things are not what they appear to be, nor are they otherwise. I think this Sung Zhao, I know that he was executed. The emperor had him executed. The emperor had made a request of him, request in quotes. He ordered him to appear or something, and this Sung Zhao had declined. And so the emperor condemned him to death. And he was thrown into prison and spent some time there. And then when the day of his execution arrived, those who went in to get him from his cell were amazed to see him in very good humor, serene and radiant. And they asked him how he could be like this on the day that he was to be beheaded. And he said something like, "As all things are without substance, the gleaming blade will cut through as through a spring breeze." This is the ultimate test, isn't it? You're about to be executed. Okay, now what about your emptiness? And it's where the rubber hits the road. All right, now back to the case. Oh, this is what I was looking for. By Sun Zhao. He gave a commentary on the a commentary called "Nirvana Has No Name." It's and this is a section on wondrous existence. The mysterious way is in ineffable enlightenment. Enlightenment is in merging with reality. Merging with reality involves seeing existence and non-existence as equal, and when you see them equally, then others and self are not two. Therefore, heaven, earth, and I have the same root. The myriad things and I are one body. Now back to the koan. So this Lu Gong is chatting with Nan Xuan one day, and he quotes Sun Zhao, "Heaven and earth and I are of the same root, all things and I are of one substance." And then he says, "Isn't that marvelous?" Another translation has it, "Isn't that fantastic?" The implication being that this is so contrary to our conventional thinking, which we think that I am here and you are there and they are there and everything is separate. Everyone is separate. So he quotes this, "All things and I are of one substance. Isn't that marvelous?" At which Nan Xuan pointed to a flower in the garden, called to him, "Lu Gong." Lu Gong turns and he says, "People these days see this flower as though they were in a dream." This this formulation, "people these days," well, we know what person in particular he was talking about when he said, "People these days see this flower as though they were in a dream." we can get so captivated. That's really the word. We can become captive to the to words, and especially the well-turned words, well-turned phrases, and many, many are those literary types who have been become enthralled with the teachings of Zen, because they are, after all, so exalted, so they point to such a lofty experience. And it was especially problematic in from a Zen master's point of view, it was especially problematic in China to this matter of memorizing sayings and phrases of the ancients. And you would be held in high esteem if you, the more of these things you could recite. And this is just what Lu Gong is doing. Reminds me of Roshi Kaplow, Philip Kaplow at the time. Philip Kaplow, when he came back from the Nuremberg trials and the Tokyo war crimes trials in Germany in 1945, he began auditing courses on Zen with D.T. Suzuki in New York. And he says that to his later amazement, D.T. Suzuki never talked about Zazen. It was all just these wonderful, breathtaking, philosophical texts and ideas. Well, it worked with Philip Kaplow. It really hooked him. And off he went to Japan. He said what he thought was that when he got there and he found a Zen Roshi, they would have sip sake together and in one of these beautiful Japanese gardens, and that somehow by osmosis, to use his word, he would come to enlightenment. It's really a stunning thing that D.T. Suzuki, this famous name in Western Zen, that he would never have talked about the need for sitting and training. Imagine Kaplow's surprise. Well, it's hard to argue with success. A lot of us have come to Zen practice through the wonder of the literature, Zen literature, and the sayings of the masters. It's a real bright line between those who get stuck and just continue reading and romanticizing about Zen, and those who get down and really bake bread. This matter of a dream is quite a compelling one in practice and Zen teaching, because in a sense, reality, this world, can be understood as dreamlike. It's dreamlike from a Buddhist perspective in that all things are evanescent. That means they're not fixed. They're in flux. Our senses are too limited to see, to confirm visually that things are shimmering. Things are just basically energy. Energy and certain different kinds of condensed forms. But in recent decades, we've had the benefit of modern science and the incredible precision of these instruments to be able to confirm that everything that seems so thing-like, substantial, is in fact empty. It's ephemeral. As soon as we say, this is, it no longer is. We can't say it exists, strictly speaking, because there's no fixed thing there. It's energy in flux. We are energy in flux. Everything. We can point to every physical thing, and if every physical thing, certainly things of the mind. Flux, all of it. Buddha compared it to, used different similes. It's like bubbles, like mist, like a phantom. But Buddhism recognizes that we also can't simply say it doesn't exist. If you hit your head against the wall, you find out that, you know, in a very real way, it exists. And yet, Wittgenstein said, so call it a dream. What does it matter? Well, it can make a big difference if we come to the insight that things are also no things. That this world of appearances is not to be entirely taken for the appearance. It has tremendous implications. And there's the idea of a dream as a kind of a daydream, a notion that we may have. Perhaps this Liu Gong, this high government official, had some insight into the oneness of all things. And he couldn't restrain himself. Maybe he was in a state of some rapture. Isn't that marvelous? Heaven and earth and I are of the same root. All things and I are of one substance. Fantastic, isn't it? Wow. But Nanxuan knew that he had a real exceptional student here, and so he couldn't let him get away with it. There's a statement here in a commentary on this koan. This koan, by the way, number 40 in the Blue Cliff record, it also happens to be number 91 in the Book of Equanimity. About a third, roughly a third of the koans in the Book of Equanimity, the Shoryu Roku, also appear in the Blue Cliff record or the Mumonkan. So in the Book of Equanimity, the commentator on this koan commenting on Nanchuan, saying people these days see this flower as though they were in a dream, said it was like leading him to a 100,000-foot-high cliff and giving him a push, causing his root of life to break off. Nanchuan didn't want the good to get in the way of the better on the part of this Lu Gong. Yes, wonderful that you've had this insight, but now can you get rid of it? Can you let it go? Go beyond that. Go beyond your notions of all of this marvelous thing. Rinzai, or Lin Chi, to use his Chinese name, Lin Chi, said it very well: to speak of a thing misses the mark. As soon as we say anything, we fall short of the experience. This too is what is so uncompromising and lofty about Zen teaching, is recognizing that we have to always go beyond the words. Our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.